but I haven't heard the little buzzard sign. All right, I'm going to get started. Welcome, everybody, to the CVAG Executive Committee Agenda. It's Monday, February 27, 2023. We're going to go ahead and call this meeting in order at 4:30. And just a reminder for the public, this meeting is being held online and probably will be one of our last meetings. But with that, we're going to ask the clerk to call for the record the roll.
Good evening. Thank you, Chair. City of Palm Springs?
Present.
City of Indio?
Present.
29 Palms Band of Mission Indians? Torres Martinez Desert Cahuilla Indians? Cabazon Band of Cahuilla Indians?
Here.
Agua Caliente Band of Cahuilla Indians? City of Indian Wells?
Present.
City of Cathedral City?
Here.
City of Palm Desert?
Here.
City of La Quinta?
Present.
City of Blythe?
Over here.
County of Riverside? City of Rancho Mirage?
Here.
City of Desert Hot Springs?
Present.
And City of Coachella?
Present. I'm going to ask my friend from the beautiful city of Blythe if you could lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Would everybody please stand? Follow me, please. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands.
One nation
under God,
indivisible,
with liberty
for all
and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joey. With that, we'll move on to agenda modifications. Tom, any modifications?
There are no modifications to the agenda.
Okay, we'll move on now to public comments on agenda items. This is the time and place for members of the public to address the executive committee on agenda items. Is there any public comments?
Chair, we received no written comments, and I don't see any hands raised. And for the record, the supervisor from the 4th District is here.
Welcome, Supervisor Perez. With that, we'll move on to item number 6. Let me just take a brief moment and welcome to the executive committee Palm Springs Mayor Pro Tem Jeffrey Bernstein, Indian Wells Mayor Donna Griffith, Cathedral City Mayor Rita Lamb, and Supervisor Ixion Gutierrez. Welcome to the CVAG Executive Committee agenda. Hey, thank you. Tom, any announcements?
Yeah, I do have an announcement. I think most of you know we have moved offices, or at least we're in the process of moving offices. I'm actually broadcasting with our team from our office at Parkview, where we're going to keep our traffic management center and our homeless team. But over the weekend, we moved over to our new building, which is at One El Paseo, next to Mayor Kelly's favorite deli, I think, right, Mayor Kelly? And there's the building, in case you need to track us down. We're on the first floor, suite 100. Sure, we'll have all of you over at that building at some point in the future. And I do want to note that as we finish up our virtual meetings this month, we will be having in-person meetings in the future, likely back at the Parkview meeting, where, again, we've used those meeting rooms for close to 30 years. With that, Chair, that's the end of my report.
Thank you, Mr. Executive Director, and congratulations on your new offices. We'll move on to the consent calendar. What are the wishes of the executive committee?
I move consent on desert.
I'll second.
There is a motion by Palm Desert, and there is a second by...
Pick one, La Quinta.
La Quinta. Perfect. We have a motion, and I'm going to ask the clerk to call for the record. Well, actually, all those in favor signify by raising your hands and saying aye.
Aye.
Any objections? Aye. Any abstentions? Seeing none or hearing none, motion carries. Move on now to item number 7-1. Is there holdovers from the consent calendar? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number 8. This is CVAG's audit for fiscal year 2021-2022. Claude, welcome.
Well, thank you, Chair Hernandez, and welcome to all of our new members of the Executive Committee. And thank you for being here today. I always think that's important to say, so thank you for being here today. And before I jump into announcing Shannon Ayala with the audit firm, I just wanted to note our eagle-eyed Finance Committee helped identify a typo in some discussion in the audit report. So just if you want to note, on page 90 of your agenda packet, there's some discussion about a Measure A fund in the first bullet, first sentence. The word decrease should be increase, and everything will flow a little better if you actually get to that part and read that. So thank you, Finance Committee Member Gregory, for helping us spot that. Really appreciate that. And again, I have the pleasure of introducing Shannon Ayala with Davis Farr LLP, who performed the CPA financial statement audit of CVAG for the second time this year with the June 30th, 2022 financials. Because CVAG policy mandates auditor rotation every 5 years, Shannon and her team at Davis Farr will be conducting the audits through fiscal year 24-25. And just a couple of big picture items for this last fiscal year. You might notice that CVAG's net position increased pretty substantially, which was mostly driven by the capitalization of construction and progress expenditures for both the CV Link and the CV Sync programs, as we're seeing great progress on your jurisdictions and throughout the valley. So that was a big increase in the net position there. And also of note, and you may have heard this from me before, is a change in the interest rate environment, right? Culminating towards the end of fiscal year 2022, when the Fed began raising rates in March at really historic levels. You might notice some unrealized losses on the books because of this. There are paper gains and losses. And, you know, you've likely seen the same thing at your agencies. And I just point this out as it can actually be interpreted as a good sign, because those unrealized losses generally means more interest income, more cash. And in fact, I was reading, and some of you may have read yesterday in the Desert Sun, there was an article about the county's mid-year financial position, and the article stated that interest earnings within the county pool are expected to be upwards of $35 million more than earlier estimated. And as CVAG's portfolio is currently pretty heavily invested in the county investment pool, you know, it's just a testament that CVAG's also going to continue to benefit from the Fed's new monetary policy into the near future, at least. And kind of final note, as CVAG and the accounting department prepares for a well-placed move to a new and upgraded financial accounting system, aka an ERP system or an enterprise resource planning system, in the coming fiscal years, which we budgeted for, it has given staff the opportunity to take a fresh look, a fresh set of eyes on some of the timing and tracking of the revenue and expenditures between fiscal years. And I just wanted to emphasize this, that, you know, we kind of took this as, in my words, a cleanup year, and we consciously reviewed and decided that we need to make some prior period adjustments between the fiscal years. As we did some of that cleanup. You know, these adjustments aren't ideal, but I'm really proud of the work our team has done to be at a place to identify these items and put us in the best position for closing out fiscal year 2023 in just a few short months. And while the new financial system won't be up and running by July 1st, we might not even have it selected by July 1st. You know, staff has really put a lot of stop gaps in place, and some of those measures already put in place include continuous conversations with member agencies on timely billing of arterial projects. And I just really want to thank the city staff and all the agencies, the county as well, for their work and working with us diligently on this front. And just another example of one of these measures we've taken until we get our ERP system in place is this beautiful grant and revenue recognition spreadsheet that we've developed to help us better match some of those expenditures to the revenue source. So, you know, I call these measures stopgap, as the real benefits going to be coming with the implementation of that new ERP system, as I identified in the staff report information item, a 9R in your agenda packet, if you care to read 9R. So, you know, that's my intro, a little long-winded. I'm sure Shannon will be happy to let me hand it over to her now. So take it away, Shannon.
Shannon, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Claude. Make sure I can work on moving the slide. Oh, there we go. Okay. Thank you very much for the introduction. As Claude mentioned, we completed the audit for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2022. And as a result, we issued an unmodified opinion dated February 22nd of 2023. The unmodified opinion is the highest level of opinion that can be received on the financial statements. It indicates that the financial statements and the footnotes are presented fairly and in all material respects and in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. I will note in the audit opinion, there was an emphasis of matter related to those prior period adjustments that Claude mentioned. Our opinion is not modified with respect to that matter, and it's a standard paragraph whenever there are prior period adjustments. We also issued the communication to those in governance letter and the government auditing standards opinion and the single audit report. So I will note this year we did issue the single audit report at the same time as the financial statement. So that's a testament to Claude and his team for getting everything complete and ready for us to do so at the same time. As a result of the audit, we did have a couple of material audit adjustments. The first one was to correct the revenue and unavailable revenue related to those prior period adjustments in various funds that Claude talked about, and then also to correct the LAIF investment account. And then we did have an overarching internal control recommendation related to the material audit adjustments, the prior period adjustments, and the journal entries that we were provided after the final trial balance. This recommendation and management's response to the recommendation would be included in the single audit report as part of the government auditing standards opinion. In addition to our standard audit procedures of confirming material or confirming all cash and investment accounts and long-term liabilities, we also did have some significant audit areas in which we performed some additional testing. This year, we looked at the construction in progress due to the very large dollar amount of $26 million in project costs, just to ensure that the CV Link and CV Sync projects were in fact still in process. And we also did some sampleized testing on the expenditures that were incurred to ensure that they were for CVAG's portion of the costs related to the project and properly recorded. We didn't have any exceptions noted during this testing. And then due to the significance again of receivables from other agencies and unavailable revenue, we also confirmed this year the revenue and receivables with 10 member agencies and then performed further analyzation of the TUMF revenues for the year to ensure that the amounts recorded from each agency were reasonable. Again, we didn't have any exceptions other than the adjustments noted. And then lastly, implementation of GASB 87. I'm sure you're all aware that there was a new accounting standard this year related to leases. So we did review the leases that the association had during fiscal year 22 and determined that there were not any leases that qualified for reporting. So this year's financial statements do not reflect any lease payables or receivables. However, due to the exciting new move that the executive director mentioned in his comment, there was a new lease entered into. So for the financial statements for fiscal year 22-23, you will likely see a right to use asset reported for that lease as well as an offsetting liability. So just be aware that that will be out there in the next financial statements. And lastly, I can answer any questions that you may have had about the audit process or the results.
Thank you. Any questions? Is there any questions? Anybody want to? There are none. Are we going to take a motion? Anybody want a motion to approve this?
I'll move approval of the audit and appreciate Shannon and her team's work, as well as Claude. Claude's got a handle now on multiple audits underway, and with a new financial system, I can't wait to see how much faster he's going to be able to produce these documents for this requirement.
I'll second that, Rancho Mirage.
Oh, and Indian Wells. We're all in favor.
There's a first, a second, and a third. Can we get a roll call, please? Or actually, all those in favor, signify by saying aye or raising your hand. Any abstentions? Any noes? Hearing none, motion carries. Good work, Claude. And Shannon, thank you. We'll move on to item number B. This is update on the looming closure of Chappaqua Valley State Prison. Erica?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Oh, we have a hand raised.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Chair, if I may ask staff to move me over to the other room, I'm going to have to recuse myself on this item, being that I'm still employed by the California Department of Corrections.
Okay. Seems like Councilmember Furman will recuse himself. And with that, go ahead, Erica.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, good evening to all of you. As noted in your staff report, in December 2022, the California Department of Corrections announced that it was starting the process to close the Chuckawalla Valley State Prison near the City of Blythe. And we do have, for those of you who are not familiar with it, a map here to give you some perspective. Where the prison is located as it in proximity to the City of Blythe. The prison actually opened in 1988, and there's some history there, and it is adjacent to Ironwood State Prison. And just to kind of give you some perspective, it is a large facility. At the Public Safety Committee meeting, the state came and made a presentation about the factors that played into their decision to close, including the cost to operate and the impact of closure on the surrounding communities and the workforce. However, we have heard from the City of Blythe, who has expressed strong concerns about the economic impacts that will result from the closure. There was a presentation, and I know the mayor here is far more familiar with this facility than I could explain, and is also on the city's ad hoc. The city is in the process of seeking quite a bit of information from the state that they are waiting to get some feedback on. Frankly, there was at the public safety meeting, there was a number of unanswered questions with our own committee. And at the end, the public safety committee's recommendation was that we direct the executive director to assist the city in its efforts to reexamine and reconsider the closure. And if that closure appears to be moving forward, advocate for repurposing the facility and meaningful mitigation measures. Chair, if it's okay with you, I would turn the floor over to the mayor from Blythe to could perhaps give you some better perspective on their concerns.
Absolutely, Mayor DeConnick.
Yes, sir. You know, we've been working very hard on this. We were never notified this was coming down. We just got it through the grapevine and made a contact with the Warren Gordon back in December, find this was coming down. We've tried to get contact with the state, which we finally had a meeting about a month ago. And yes, I'm going to say there were some good things come out of it, but we've asked for a lot of paper requests and we've had some of them denied now. And mainly is trying to come up with the numbers why and to try to understand what the direction they're going and how they're putting things together. We formed a committee, and we're working with an outside consultant and a lobbyist to try to make things move forward and try to go best way to go. The other option we're looking at, we found out Norco wants to close there. So we're giving the state the option, once you close Norco and leave Blythe alone. Blythe is it's one of the newest prisons. They just spent quite a bit of money updating the health department there where Norco has it. They're going to spend three times the money we found out on Norco than it takes to run this one. There's a lot of things that we can make whole better for the state by keeping this one open. And, you know, back in the day, the state was looking for plate places to put prisons, and Bly stepped up to the plate. Some people were for it, some weren't. But basically, it came down. They decided they'd come to Bly. They've owned about 1,700 acres out there. They've got room for five prisons. They ended up building two and then later changed their mind. But basically, Ironwood and Coachella are two great facilities. They got started here with our college that's helped 250 students a year through them go through the college programs to get some of their degrees and get some other stuff they've done through the prison system. And it was a experimental project, and now it's working across the state. So, but the big problem here is they're our biggest employer. And when this does hit, it's going to hit hard. And one of the other considerations is, what are they going to do with the facility? They're supposed to do something with it, but that's, they can have 2 to 3 years to figure that out. But by that time, you know, it's going to be a lot of issues. But I think they're making a wrong call and not, you know, looking at what bottom line, the cost to keep this one running is cheaper and better than, you know, doing Norco. And Norco wants theirs gone. So, I mean, that's what we're trying to do, is trying to work with everybody to come up with a great solution. So that's where we're at. And I'm going to take my hat off to Mallory, our city manager, and Johnny Rodriguez, which is our vice mayor now. He's the next sheriff, you know, retired from the sheriff department. He's very on top of this. And he really gets down to the different things, the different people, and working with things to try to make this happen. So I'm blessed to have him on board. And it's just, he's working hard. So that's where we're at. I'm asking for help from CBAG, you know, to help us move forward and do what we can do to help the situation out in Bly.
Are there any questions for the mayor as well, or maybe Erica, from anyone here on the CVAG executive?
Just very quickly, the mayor forgot to mention the County Riverside has stepped up as well and has requested, obviously, not to close the prison. And if so, what does the mitigation look like? What does that look like moving forward when it comes to the economic and social concerns of the city of Bly? There was a grand jury report that came out not too long ago that states quite a bit of concerns dealing with Bly. And quite frankly, that's something that we need to be very thoughtful and mindful of moving forward, because anything that closes in Bly right now would be impactful in a very negative way. And so the County Riverside Economic Development Department is also working with Mallory and working with the chamber out there to try to figure out other ways as to how we can provide resources, trying to figure out how we can maybe even bring in other businesses. But know, though, that we've reached out to our assembly member, the senator. I don't know where the congressman is on this issue. I know it's a state issue, but nonetheless, though, the senator and the assembly member are just kind of waiting to see what the state and the governor is going to do moving forward. So there are a lot of questions that have not been dealt with, have not been answered. I think once we get some sort of formal response, I think at that point we need to review that and then make sure that we speak to those, to that response that we receive, and try to do that in a way in which we're a unified CVAG or a unified team, meaning the Coachella Valley as well as the Blythe area coming together on this effort.
Okay, any other comments or questions?
Yes, I want to thank Manuel for stepping in, and you know, there's a lot of stuff on my mind, but there's a lot of things I didn't mention too. But you know, yes, everybody's helping and trying to do the best they can, and I think it's great. And so there's a lot of factors, and we just got notified the other day we had a Kentucky Fried Chicken was ready to go. They heard about the prison, they backed out. So that's just already some things starting to come down in our little community where we, you know, things we do need. So it will be a big impact here. Big. Thank you. Thank you, Daniel.
Mr. Mayor, if there are no other questions or comments, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, I would like to make the motion to move forward, whatever CBAG can do to make this move forward.
Sure. I believe Mayor Evans may have a question.
Mayor Evans.
Sure. I support the motion. I'm just wondering, Joey, are the lobbyist consultants that you've engaged, are they also working not just to try to keep it open? It sounds like it's a lease renewal, and I don't think that's going to move forward, but are they also exploring this company and what they may have repurposed in other facilities that they no longer lease to CDCR, or what other mitigation is available? Is that part of the exploration should this not remain open as a prison?
Yes, we're working, we're trying to keep it open, but if things don't work out, we still work in the other direction too. What's going to be available out there, with the state's supposed to do something, but in conversation with the state, they could take 2 or 3 years to do it. And, meanwhile, you got issues out there. I mean, it's a unique place. Mm-hmm. What think about it, there's plenty of room. It's right. Just off the freeway. They got plenty of water. This is one thing, and got plenty of room. And they got solar already out there. I mean, they've done a lot of stuff out there. And so somehow this stuff don't really make sense, but we're trying to put our best foot forward to move forward. And the other day when we had a meeting, you asked me questions about some promises. Mm-hmm. I went investigate that. No, there was no promises that we can find. I know they made some promises to us, but they weren't in writing about the labor inmate program and that, which they eventually took away from us. So I'm just relating to some of those situations, but
thanks for that follow up.
Yeah. So I think it'd be helpful, Mr. Mayor, and to the rest of the group here, you put together a letter on behalf of Blythe, the city did, kind of explaining that it should not close, and possibly looking at Norco and then what would be the mitigation efforts and the type of resources in case it did. We put together a letter as well. So what we could do is forward you all those letters so that at least you can have some more context, some more background. I think that might be helpful to all of you.
Well, Mr. Mayor, we do have a motion, and there is a second by the County of Riverside. All those in favor of this motion, signify by saying aye or raising your hand.
Aye.
Any noes or abstentions? Seeing none, this motion carries. I would like to welcome Mr. Vice Chair Joseph Morales to the meeting. Welcome, Torres Martinez. Move on now to item number C, the Coachella Valley Housing First 2022 Year in Review. Erica and Ivan.
Yes, coming to you from the same screen here at CVAG. Chair, we are entering our third year of operating CV Housing First in-house. This was a decision you all made some time ago. And as we enter our third year, we wanted to provide some perspective on our program, its successes, and where we see additional opportunities. So as a little bit of recap, in the first year for CV Housing First, we have permanently housed 75 members of our CV200. And you'll all recall from our previous updates, the CV200 is those chronically homeless individuals, the hardest cases that have been identified by law enforcement, by your code enforcement and our other partners as those most frequently seen and interacted with out on the streets. Last year, at the beginning of the year, based on your direction, we reset the list and went back to a 200. We did this in partnership with law enforcement and all those partners, and we looked at those who may be getting services elsewhere or may no longer be in the Valley. We reset the list. And over the course of the year, we permanently housed 54 individuals. Ivan's going to tell you about a couple of our clients.
Hi, everybody. This is Ms. Newton. She's been homeless for 4 or 5 years in Desert Hot Springs, living on the street. She's actually been to our program a few times, once in 2021, another time in 2022, but we were unable to successfully house her due to various reasons. But this most recent time, I want to say I connected with her during outreach in Palm Springs with our Mobile Access Center, And we spoke. She wanted to give a third round, and she committed to our program and our CVAG unit, and we were able to successfully house her. And this is Miss Ann Calderon. She's been homeless for over a decade in the city of Coachella. She's been hanging out around the Dylan Loves area. She's very popular among the other homeless individuals that live in that that space. She came to our program, did the exact same program as the other client, and we were able to sort out all of her documents. She received case management. We were able to establish her public benefit so that we could locate her a low-income housing unit.
And over the course of the year, you have all the numbers in your staff report there, but over the course of the year, we also permanently housed non-CV 200 clients, and we track those by household as we have in years past, and we did house another 16 of those. But not all of our clients are success stories. And as you know, our executive director's been committed, and our team has been committed to making sure we're very transparent on those as well. So Ivan will tell you about one of our clients.
This is Mrs. B. She's been homeless for a few years in the city of Palm Desert. She actually came to us as a hospital discharge and was referred to us by the hospital. And we brought her into our program, much like the others, gave her an opportunity, but her mental health proved to actually be a very big problem. I think about a week prior to learning that we were able to secure a voucher for her, she had a mental breakdown and was ultimately 5150. I believe she's on the street now, and we're looking to reconnect with her so that we can find her a unit.
We actually have a voucher for her. It's one of the hardest parts about this particular story. She just was not able to get to the finish line. Now, there's a number of factors. Without a doubt, we have seen a drop this year, and we have spent quite a bit of time analyzing why that would be. The first kind of point I would note is that we didn't really have a running start in this year like we did the year before. If you look at our 2021 numbers, the first two quarters were higher than the later two quarters, and that's in part because we had Path of Life on board prior, and we had some of those kind of in progress, those case management in progress. Without a doubt, there's been difficulty securing vouchers and getting on the voucher as a list. We found some ways to try to expedite that process. The Homelessness Committee received a presentation from ICLS, for example. It's a way we've been able to really reinforce our case management and how we case manage in a short period of time. But at the same time, rent costs are going up. Your staff report talks about a situation where we had a voucher that was $150 less than what the rent was. We couldn't make that work. And at the same time, and you all know this all too well, we need more doors in the Coachella Valley. So at the same time, we're also looking at additional metrics. That's including our length of stay. I think you all recall we try to case manage our clients within 90 days. In some cases, our length of stay is extended a little bit because we know we're really close to getting to the finish line with a client, getting them permanently housed. And the longer a client stays in one of our units or one of our hotel rooms or one of our apartments, so that's the less turnover that we can do and start the next client. That's our total numbers. And, you know, we've had, we're also tracking individuals who fall out of housing. So we thought we had about four who fell out of housing in the last year. Your staff report notes that it's actually two who fell out of housing in 2022, about those 54 clients. And every 6 months or so, we're checking back in with the clients to see how they are doing so we can track long-term successes. So moving forward for 2023, we have been working with the Homelessness Committee and had a separate presentation about how to address 2023, in particular, how to increase the number of successful permanent housing. So based on their direction and conversation, staff is right now exploring ways to address that funding gap with vouchers. So under most of our vouchers, we can't subsidize or pay the difference in rent, but you could create a landlord incentive program and encourage more landlords to work with voucher programs. There's also a potential for investing in property. We've learned from county staff that there may be some funding available, ARPA funding that may be able to be used for a purchase of a duplex or a triplex or a four-unit kind of property, something very small. This is something that the homelessness committee thought deserved some additional exploration. This is in the really infant concept stage. We're not coming to you with any recommendation on this. The homelessness committee has created an ad hoc that we're going to work through to explore the potential and whether the numbers all can work out. And based on that, we would come back to you for further direction. So with that, the recommendation before you would be to receive and file the quarterly report for 2022, and I'm happy to address any questions.
Any questions?
I just want to say thanks for the work of the Housing First team. I know there was a lot of controversy bringing in-house from Path of Life Ministries, and I think that was the right decision. And there's obviously been some adaptability and flexibility in kind of recreating and owning that process. And I think that the results clearly show that we are helping people. We can't help enough people fast enough because it just seems to be accumulating with lots of socioeconomic concerns out there. But good job to the team and thank you for the work that you do.
Kathleen?
Thank you. Have we assessed whether the new system of care courts can be of help to us in situations like that one unsuccessful case that you described?
That's a great question. There's actually an item later in your staff report, an informational item. The care court, Riverside County is one of the first to roll out the care court, and I'm looking to see if I know the number offhand. It is 9Q for those of you with your agenda. The care court is rolling out still. So the short answer is we're not quite sure how that's going to help those unsuccessful clients that otherwise would have been successful. However, in the interim, we're trying to find ways to address some of those issues. ICLS, Inland Counties Legal Services, for example, has been a huge partner for us in helping to address some of the paperwork issues and other legal challenges. This is something that goes a little bit beyond our case management in-house, and we've been able to work through them. We are in close coordination with Greg, for example, and others at the county as they roll out the care court. So if there's a way, we will be sure to stick our program in there and make sure we're used. And I know actually when Care Court was talked about at one of the homelessness committee meetings, the homelessness committee expressed an interest in perhaps having a pilot out here as well, if we could make that work. But unfortunately, the state rollout of that is still ongoing.
Any other questions? I see none in the queue. With that, can we get a motion to receive and file this item? Well, actually, I don't need a motion on this. It doesn't look like.
You can take.
You don't. You don't need one. It's been received, and we'll file it.
Thank you. With that, we'll move on to item number D, and this is amendment to the Advanced Tech CVC. And Eric, welcome.
Good evening, Honorable Executive Committee members. So we're talking about phase two now. Phase one is drawing to a close. We're now talking about phase two. And in phase two, Advantec is our engineer. When they did phase one, they included construction support to the tune of about 6% of the construction costs. In phase two, which is what we're talking about now, it was back in April of 2018, they did not include construction support. It was pretty far off in the future and they hadn't done phase one. We've added to their scope for construction support from what they did in phase one. And we now have 18 corridors instead of 3, 10 agencies still. As many as 6 crews will be working at the same time And this project will take over 2 years to complete. So in looking at all of that, we've internally determined that it's probably going to cost up to $4 million or maybe even more, similar 5% of the construction costs versus 6% before. But we didn't want to bite off that big of a piece to chew. So too much risk for both CVAG and or the consultant. So we're taking a smaller bite and we're saying $1 million. So 1% of the construction costs. We're pretty sure that we'll be back. But this will give us the ability to really control the dollars much better. We've got our construction manager, TKE, that's already working with CVAG, working with our contractor, and working with our engineer. They'll kind of be the arbiter of what gets handed out, and they'll be reviewing our invoices from Advantech. So again, we'll have a little tighter control. And at the same time, we believe that this will be a more efficient way to handle this as CVAG's side of the coin instead of the contractor's side. It seemed to be a bottleneck, and it seemed to be inefficient, and it seemed to rub, frankly, your jurisdictions the wrong way because it wasn't effective. It wasn't timely. It wasn't working very well. And we think that by taking this internally and managing it through our construction manager, we can fix all of those things. And so therefore, we're recommending that we move forward with amendment number 4 for Advantech for just $1 million. Again, we'll probably be back, but not to exceed $1 million for phase 2. And then at the same time, extend the contract date to the anticipated end of the construction, which would be March 31st, 2025.
Well, thank you for that explanation. Are there any questions? I see nobody's hand in the queue. I'm going to ask for a motion. Is there a motion?
La Quinta will move approval of this because we know that you've got Chris Gunterson on your team now, the great, great Chris Gunterson from the city of La Quinta, who masterfully ran our camera system and is working with you all on the CV sync in our jurisdiction. Now he gets to benefit the entire valley. So we're definitely sharing and caring.
Well, thank you for that, Mayor Evans. Is there a second?
Indio, second.
Indio seconds. That once happened to us in Coachella when we had Jonathan Hoy, who left us to come to see that. But that, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye or raising your hand.
Aye.
Any abstentions? Any nays? Seeing none, we'll move on now to item number 9 is informational items. And then we'll move on to item number 10, our legislative items. This is an update on state and federal advocacy efforts. Emmanuel.
Good evening, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. Emmanuel Martinez, providing you a brief update on our state and federal advocacy efforts. Beginning with the state, as you all know, we have a big change in terms of representatives in the legislature. Almost a third of our representatives are new, but although we care about many issues on the transportation side, our Senate Chairwoman Lena Gonzalez remains in that position, and Laura Friedman is also again assigned to chair the Assembly Transportation Committee, and that's noted in the staff report, as well as the deferred areas. Mid-January, Senate Rules Committee assigned senators to the cities of La Quinta, Indian Wells, Palm Desert, Rancho Mirage, Cathedral City, Palm Springs, and Desert Hot Springs, which all fall in Senate District 19. And that is because there's an anomaly that happens every 10 years after redistricting, right? So Senator Padilla is going to be the representative for La Quinta, Indian Wells, Palm Desert, Rancho Mirage. Senator Kelly Sayardo will represent Cathedral City, Palm Springs, and Desert Hot Springs into the next election for Senate District 19. And just want to note that for your constituents' services at the state. On the state budget, which we're following closely as well, the governor released his budget early January. There is a 22.5 budget gap that's been reported. We're keeping a close eye on that and its fiscal impact on programs that we care about. And although budget subcommittees have commenced, we won't report back and have more solid numbers into the May revise after the April tax receipts are in. So we'll report back then on the fiscal outlook of the state. But I do want to report that despite the decrease in revenue at the state level, we do anticipate state earmarks or district budget requests to happen this year again. The assembly has put a deadline of May 1st. So we'll report back on the criteria for those earmarks, but do know that that is another opportunity for your cities to request funding to our representatives. On the legislative front, just really quickly, I want to report on three bills, AB6 and AB7 by Laura Friedman, which are similar to the bills that we opposed last year. As you recall, Assemblymember Laura Friedman, chair of the Transportation Committee, had legislation that would tie transportation funds, including local funds, to the state climate goals, which could be crippling to your decision-making on how local funds should be used. So we'll be coordinating with RCTC on that. And there's also a SB 411 by Portantino regarding teleconferencing and hybrid meetings. And I believe Aaron Sassy will provide more info on that, but it's one that we're tracking closely. On the federal side, $10.4 million in earmarks are coming, reported to the Transportation Committee, $1.5 for Indio, for Monroe and I-10, 2.7 for 29 Palms Band, the Mission Indians for the Dillon Road, 2.5 for Desert Hot Springs for addressing flooding and blow sand, 2.5 for Sunline for fueling infrastructure, and 1.2 for IID for the North Shore Resiliency Project. On that note, do know that the Senate has put forth very aggressive timelines for congressionally directed spending or earmarks. March 3rd is the deadline this Friday for Senator Padilla and March 13th for Senator Feinstein. So we'll be working on those requests and happy to support cities and collaborate with them, provide more details. The House has not put out their guidance for their request for community directed spending, but we'll continue to track that with our federal lobbyists. So with that, happy to answer any questions before I turn it over to Ms. Sassy.
Any questions? Well, seeing none, thank you for that presentation, Emmanuel. We'll move it on to our League of California Cities. Erin, welcome, Erin.
Well, thank you, Chair, committee members. I think that this is a good tag team effort, so thank you for your update that you just provided. I did want to talk about a couple of Brown Act modernization bills. I know that this has been something that you've all been discussing, and there's three bills right now. One is AB 557 by Hart. This would basically eliminate the sunset date provision of AB 361. And it would give cities and counties 45 days instead of 30 to renew your local resolution stating that you're going to use AB 361. So that one's moving forward. And there's other bills. One is currently a spot bill. It's AB 817 by Pacheco, Blanca Pacheco out of LA. This one right now is going to help with advisory bodies. So maybe if you're a non-decision-making entity, so some of your subcommittees that would be providing recommendations to you, this would allow for the use of virtual meetings moving forward. So definitely could be helpful for some of the meetings, especially when travel is related. But right now, the one I really wanted to note is SB 411 by Portantino. And there's a little bit of politics with this bill right now. So right now, the way the bill is drafted, it would allow for decision-making entities to use virtual meetings. So you would be able to continue using virtual meetings. It does have urgency, which means it will require a two-thirds vote. But basically what I understand is that there was a drafting error with this legislation. So while the current language is very useful and would help you, the author's intent was for it to just apply to neighborhood councils in Los Angeles. So my recommendation would be, if you like the way it's currently drafted, I would definitely reach out to his office, tell them that you support it, send in letters. And the hope is that maybe if there's enough support out there, that they would keep the current language. Because as you know, with Brown Act modernization, there's been pretty much a lack of an appetite to really do a lot of the reforms that we think would be very helpful and that would bring us to our modern times. Obviously, we know that remote meetings have been very successful over the past couple of years, and it really does help with cities like Blythe. You have to drive a significant distance just to get to all meetings. So I definitely would say as of right now, SB 411 is the bill that you should be supporting and encouraging them to keep the language as is. I just don't know if he plans to amend it at this point, because like I said, there is a drafting error and it wasn't his original intention.
Aaron, if I could
with chime... that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Yeah, Aaron, if I could chime in there, because this is a...
I just appreciate the opportunity to give you an update. As a reminder, Friday we have our... Yes.
Tom.
Yeah, if I could chime in. Thank you, Chair. Michael Jenkins, our own legal counsel, has some expertise in this field and is called upon by the League to address Brown Act issues from now and then. And Michael mentioned the same thing to me, that perhaps we could help the author with improving the language on that bill that apparently isn't very clear. Is that fair to say, Mike Jenkins? Yeah, so this is a part of our legislative platform, and we might take advantage of Mike's expertise and have him help that office and work directly with the League in doing so.
Okay. Are there any other questions, suggestions, ideas? Seeing none, we thank you, Aaron and Emmanuel, for those great presentations. We'll move on now to item number 11, public comments on non-agenda items. This is the time and place for members of the public to address the Executive Committee. Are there any speakers?
Chair, we have no hands raised, and we received no written comments.
All right. With that, we are at announcements. The next meeting of the Executive Committee will be held on April 24, 2023 at 4:30 p.m. with additional meeting logistics to be announced very, very soon. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.